You're listening to a Monster Kid podcast.
Hi, and welcome to A Dingo Ate My Movie, a podcast that features classic Ozploitation and other slightly left of centre and overlooked Australian films from the 70s, 80s and beyond. I'm your host Pete, and today we're going to be talking about a very weird and batshit crazy film from 1993. In the sleepy street of Pebbles Court, residents are the unwilling guinea pigs in an experiment to produce and mass market a new health supplement. Their peace is shattered by an early morning accident that sees a former biologist that worked on the supplement crash his car after the effects of an overdose given to him by the success at any cost CEO of Vimyaville. From that moment on, things begin to unravel for the residents as they succumb to the hallucinogenic, body-melting effects of the tainted dietary supplement. It's left up to two detectives to follow the path of the exploding bodies, rib-stealing apparitions, and a country family so bizarre they'd give the Sawyer family a run for their money to find the truth behind the bizarre happenings. So join me and Lewis as we take a very strange journey to Pebbles Court and beyond to talk about Body Melt from 1993. Good morning, Lewis. How are you, mate?
Good afternoon, Pete.
I'm sorry.
Great. Yeah, no, I know. It's your morning. It's 4 o'clock here. I'm already drinking. It's a weird day.
Great to have you back on. Haven't had you since Turkey Shoot.
Yes,
so
yeah.
Got you back for a pretty weird movie. I showed it to May the other night. When I watched it the other night, I was sitting down with May watching it. She enjoyed it. She just thought it was very strange, especially when it gets out to the farm.
Yeah. I think I spent a lot of my time watching this movie the first time being like, okay, when is the story going to start? Like, when am I going to meet the main character? Like, when is all this going to happen? Because, I mean, like, we don't even meet the villain until the midpoint of the movie. Like the guy who's causing all of this comes in, like,
all the problem, yeah.
Yeah, like 40 to 45 minutes into the movie. And we're introduced to, like, it's like Game of Thrones. Like, have you ever tried reading Game of Thrones?
It's a bit of,
yeah, where they just, like, they throw like 8 million character names at you and you're just like, I'm just gonna close the book and watch the show now. Like, that's how I felt with this. I was like, okay, who can I latch on to here? Because everyone seems to kind of suck is like one thing. Like, all the characters are kind of dicks. And also, like, no one is like actively like working against the corporation except for the cops, who like just don't know what they're doing the whole time. Like, they're so in the dark.
They're just following their nose sort of,
right,
thing, and stumbling on things like recordings and things like that. Yeah, it's funny.
I kept thinking of Paris, Texas while watching this, where I was like, at some point, this is all going to intersect and make sense. All of these subplots.
But it didn't, did it? So I think the first thing I wrote down is, like, this movie was originally conceived to be an anthology. And you can kind of see that when you watch the movie. So there's kind of like, there's four stories, right? So we have the story about Paul Matthews, I think he is the DJ. And then we got Brian and Cheryl Rand, which are the expecting parents, and then the Noble family going off to the resort, and then Sal and Gino, who are heading to the same resort to be sperm donors.
Those Italians are just chock full of sperm. They just got to get it out.
So the movie was conceived as being four separate stories, and I guess you really see that when you look at the movie, and it is really disjointed. They try and bring it all together, but they kind of, I don't know that they fail, but they just kind of like
make it a real mishmash, yeah, like you were saying.
I mean, you know, there's like a certain degree where I feel like it's my fault in that I am really like rigid as far as like story structure goes, right? Like, you know, there's like the classic like Hollywood three act structure, and like that's what I was taught on, and I don't even fully agree with it all the time. And I forgot who it was, but someone also pointed out that it's like an inherently like American male kind of way to write a movie. But I kept looking for that in this, and that was probably my mistake going in, because
I don't know if there's any acts in this.
No,
movie.
No, it's just things just kind of happen. At a certain point, the movie washes over you. Like it all kind of just events transpire, and like no one seems to have any particular agency except for kind of the villain.
Yeah, it's very strange. Basically, it's a movie about a pharmaceutical company called Vimuvil, I think they're called, and they're creating these drugs that are supposed to be like make you stronger, and you know, like a, you know, those sort of supplements. And obviously, they haven't done a very good job of it, and they're still kind of experimenting on it. And they choose these people in Pebbles Lane, I think the name of the road's called. It's like a little cul-de-sac somewhere in Victoria. They decide that they're going to use those people as you know, guinea pigs. And a lot of hilarity ensues, basically.
Yeah, and you know, you described this as like it was supposed to be an anthology, and like that sounds great. Like I genuinely like, I wish like, you know, HBO would pick up like a Body Melt like mini series, and like we get like little 30-minute vignettes, because I like the core concept of this. I actually really do. You had sent me, when you asked me to come on the show again, and I was very excited, and you were like, here's a list of Ozploitation flicks, like
5 billion movies.
Yeah, exactly. And I saw Body Melt on there, and I didn't even realize that Body Melt was Australian. But I had heard about it a lot. I'm a screenwriter, and I was working on a script that is largely like body horror influenced. And this is a movie in my research that kept coming up. So it was like, perfect. Well, we'll check it out. And so I was really excited to see some fucking bodies melt, man. I was.
They really do. In this,
yeah, they do. And it looks really, really cool. All the gore effects are really, really interesting. And I love the idea of this like pharmaceutical testing kind of just going on in suburbia, kind of wherever. And also just the 90s-ness of this movie really took me off guard.
The effects are fantastic, though. Yeah. So I think we have the guy who did the effects is Bob McCarron. So we've had him on this show a few times. So he did Razorback. He actually did effects in Turkey Shoot, Dark Age, Howling 3. But he's also worked on Mad Max 2. He did Peter Jackson's Brain Dead. And also worked on The Matrix as well. So he's got a good lineage in regards to, he's got a lot of experience under his belt. You can kind of see the relation between this and Brain Dead, right?
Oh, totally. Yes. It's definitely got that sense of humor to it, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. It has. Yeah. So it's really good. And also, if you're Australian, you're not, obviously, but exactly. If you watch this movie, you'll see so many people that have been in TV shows. So Ian Smith was in Neighbours, or still is in Neighbours, I'm not even sure. He's been in Neighbours for like thousands of years, and he plays like this really good guy, sort of older, sort of gentleman that's in Neighbours. And we have, who else is in it? Lisa McCune and Brett Clamo. So they play husband and wife here. They're in another soapy called Blue Heelers, and they were brother and sister in Blue Heelers. So
it's a link. Is that like typical for like casting these things, like pulling from soaps and stuff?
I think in this sort of movie it is, because you know those sort of guys are available. As in all these movies, they're pretty low budget, and it's all about just as I think I mentioned in the last podcast about them getting, I think they got $1 million grant from the government to do this movie.
Oh wow!
Through Screen Victoria or through the federal government, because they have all these programs that they get funding from, and they apparently had to, when they went through the process of getting the money, applying for the money, they effectively sat them down and said to them, so why do you want to make this movie with the money? And I had to explain to them that they thought, well, there's not a lot of genre movies like this in Australia, although the Ozploitation thing being going for quite a while. But in the 90s, there was a lot of period pieces and just sort of drama and things like that. So they thought it would be great to kind of have another genre movie like this. So they got the money from them, which is totally fine. Yeah.
So in like the scope of like Ozploitation, you know, it's lifespan. I it is still going from what I understand, that there's still the occasional Ozploitation flick that gets out there. Like where is this? Is this in like a dip in Ozploitation films releasing? Is this like a height?
It probably would be, because the height of Ozploitation was definitely the 70s and 80s is when we had all those movies, you know, like we watched Turkey Shoot, that was like 80 something, and there's Man from Hong Kong, which is 70s, and all these other movies we've done mostly been 70s, 80s movies. So a lot of these later movies, although they count as Ozploitation, some of them you could sort of say, well, maybe not. Like, I just recently got the Blu-ray of Undead. Have you seen Undead?
I don't think I have, no.
And which is fantastic. I'll probably do that next year. And it's like, I can't remember when it was made, but it's not quite recent, but it's fairly recent as far as movies go.
2003, is that?
There you go. And that's quite a good movie as well. So that they really do stretch into, you know, into later. I guess the genre is more about, they're kind of low budget. They're not as well known. They're not a Crocodile Dundee, you know, they're not a Muriel's Wedding, that sort of thing. So they're a little bit more genre-ish.
Yeah.
And then we also have, when we're talking about TV stars, Gerard Kennedy, who's the lead cop in this one. He's famous for Homicide, Division 4, Blue Heelers again, and he did a few episodes of Neighbours as well. Interesting, in the Blu-ray I have of this, there's a bit of a documentary and they're interviewing Gerard Kennedy, and he played a cop for so many years. And for a period, he just didn't play cops because he was quite over it. And he was kind of like, well, I came back to be a cop for this one because I just thought it had been a while since I'd done that. So he's probably the oldest person in the movie, I think.
That probably makes sense. I found the cop characters in general in this to be kind of puzzling because, like, ultimately, you know, after watching the first time, I said, you know, I was looking for a protagonist the whole time. And I don't really find one. So on that second watch, it's the cops that you kind of latch onto because they're the ones who are actually taking steps to solve this problem. But their appearances are so like few and far between. And when they show up, like it's bumbling. Like, you know, like they don't really have an idea of what's going on. They're talking to the guy causing it. And just with no hint that there's something like hinky going on with this guy, you know, I wonder if, you know, if this was the mini series, would they be the recurring character that was in, you know, or the anthology that was in each story to go between?
Probably they need someone to hold the story together. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. They're the only one who like meet all the characters really.
The other person that's interesting in this movie is Vince Gill, who plays Pud,
oh, the hillbilly, yeah.
So if you've seen Mad Max, he was Knight Rider at the start of Mad Max.
Oh!
The guy in the car. And he's done a lot of TV as well.
Yeah, that whole subplot's really interesting. I love this one bit. So they're all inbred is like what we kind of get to at a certain point. He like yells at his daughter for sleeping with someone who's not directly related to her, which is...
I told you to keep it in the family.
I told you to keep it in the family, yeah. I was like, all right, values, great. There's this really funny moment where like one of the Italians with full of sperm is walking through the house with one of Pud's kids, I guess, and he sees a picture of Pud and he's like, is that your dad? And the guy's just like, it's complicated, it's kind of hard to tell who's related to who, how, like it's a really great bit. What a disturbing like group of people, and like I can't figure out like what their deal is and like what their motivation is, like, or why the sister winds up like brutally murdering this guy.
Yeah, it's weird, and that very scene where she does brutally murder him, it's really funny because they're in the house and the brother is out in the, or he's not brother, he's a mate, his mate is out in the farmhouse or something with I've forgotten her name. What is it? Slab. So,
beautiful so name.
It is. So he's in the farmhouse with Slab, and what a great name for a woman. Anyway, and this poor woman, I think her name's Anthea Davis. Her picture on her profile photo on IMDb is Slab.
Yeah.
I feel so sorry for her.
And she was in some stuff,
I,
like even like fairly recently, it looks like.
Yeah.
But she's just got all this horrible makeup on.
She has. I don't really know how IMDb works. I'm not sure if it's like a wiki where you can update your own sort of profile. But she probably should.
Yeah, you can update your own profile, but otherwise, like people who work with you when they're like logging in your stuff, like they can just kind of attach whatever to you, and then I think at some point you can approve or deny it, but you have to create an account to do that.
So they're in the. We'll go back to this again. So they're in the house, and we've just had that question around, you know, who's the father, who's not the father, and it's all very complicated. Then the guy's getting murdered by Slab out the back, and he hears a scream, and it's obviously his mate, and he goes, oh, what's that? We better go check. And the other guy, I think it's either Bronto or Bab or something, whatever.
There is a Bronto. I don't remember which one it
and
was.
They're like, oh, no, it's okay. I'll go and check. So the guy just stays in the house and has a look around at all the stuff. And that house is so weird. Like all the stuff on the walls, there's like that really bad Kiss mask. And
it's like if the Texas Chainsaw Massacre house, like Bennigan's bought it and then they opened up a restaurant in there and they just shoved all the, or Applebee's. I don't know what the Australian.
I don't know if this is equivalent.
Analog to that is if there's any sort of thing, but like just like a TGI Fridays where just everything on the walls is just like some random crap that the tchotchke stuff that makes sense.
That seems like that. It's interesting you had the same thought, because when I first watched this movie, I think it's really interesting. This house has, you know, quite an echo of Chainsaw Massacre to it. It's quite a strange house. It's very weirdly made up. And there's that whole scene where the guy walks into the room with the old lady watching the TV. I want to ask you about this, because in the Australian cut of the movie that I have on Blu-ray, when he walks in, the woman on the lounge is watching porn and there's very graphic pornography on the TV. So I'm not sure, where did you watch it?
Oh, I watched it on Tubi.
Okay.
Here. Yeah. So, do you have Tubi in Australia?
Yeah, we have Tubi,
yeah. So, you know, the lovely ad breaks here and there. But it was, pretty much full penetration porn going on the TV.
Yeah, so apparently the American theatrical cut originally didn't have that in it. They had something else on the TV.
It's a really weird moment. Because, I mean, he hears a scream, he runs into the room, but he is so enchanted by this porn. And I guess that's just, like, all that sperm he has saved up. That's just, like...
looking for somewhere begging. To go.
Yeah, exactly. And so he goes to sit down, and there's just this old lady there. That's it. That's the only appearance she has in the whole thing. Yeah. She's just this couch thing.
Yeah, it's very strange. I think this movie's also on... Shudder. Oh, it's on Shudder here. I'm not sure if it's on the Shudder over there. That whole scene, you know, around the farm and the car that just goes round and round, and they just think it's a great time going round and round those logs. And then later, when he tries to escape and he gets in the car and he doesn't realize it's just tuned to go round and round like that.
Yeah. Oh, the weird thing where they kill a kangaroo, which I was, you know, Australian movie. I was like, a kangaroo showing up at some point. Wonder what the interaction is going to be. The kangaroo shows up. They throw like a rock at its head and kill it. And then they rip out its adrenal glands, which one of the guys is able to like recognize. Like they cut it. The two hillbillies cut it open. The two sperm donors are like standing over them. And they're like, what the hell are you doing? Is that the adrenal gland? Like, were they in, like, med school or something? Like, how did they recognize kangaroo's adrenal gland?
Yeah, they didn't look like the sort of guys that would be going to university or anything like that. But
no.
You never know.
Not at all. They look like they have, like, a pizza delivery route.
Yeah. So that scene, that whole scene is just a crazy, crazy, crazy. Really interesting, the director of this movie, Philip Brophy, this was his second full-length feature film. His first feature film was called Salt, Saliva, Sperm and Sweat, which apparently tells the story of a mundane life of an office worker both in and out of his dull job. And it essentially focuses on acquiring and losing of bodily fluids. It's really weird. Yeah, I know.
Wow. Yeah, that's the movie he made right before this, right?
Like, yeah, apparently so. Apparently watching this film has you like appreciate body melt even more.
Oh, man. I'm going to probably check this out. That seems pretty interesting.
That might be good for Gory Picture Show, maybe. Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, yeah. We were thinking about doing some short form stuff, so that might be a good way to plug in.
Brophy's also he's an accomplished musician. He actually composed the soundtrack for this film as well, which is actually quite good. I actually quite like it.
I really liked it. Yeah, especially that opening and the like this like kind of like intense like techno. Like I feel like I'm watching that movie Hackers when it kicks in, and then there's the automated like computer voice talking and stuff over the it's the 90s ish shit.
Owen's Mill. Pebble's Court. Mobile Family. Media Tape. Cheryl and Brian Rand. Positive Pregnancy. Sal Sisson and Nina Organ 2. Sperm Donation. Paul Matthews. Vitamin Intake.
And it's 93, too, which I feel like you don't see like a lot of like these like 90s hallmarks until like a little later in the 90s, typically in American movies. But like this is 90s AF.
Yeah. And it's got that great 90s sort of techno music, and it works really well. So.
Yes. The 3D generated imagery on the guy's computer as he's checking out the different residents, I guess, of the street. It's like a, I don't know. It's right out of that time period. Like, I feel like it's a perfect encapsulation of it almost.
So is there any other sort of scenes that stuck out for you or anything?
There's one scene that I thought was just mean. Because it's not like, it wasn't super clear to me that it was a result of like these vitamins at all, like what happened to him. But the little kid, when they get to this resort that the sperm donors never make it to, there's another family that they introduce, like, I don't know, like, maybe two-thirds of the way through the movie, who do get to the resort, and they, you know, they're talking to like these muscly people, and it's all like a creepy utopia where they're gonna make them physically fit. This kid is like doing sick fucking like rollerblader moves on a half pipe, which I was like, of course, 90s, like, we gotta get like extreme sports in there somehow. And this kid is like a prodigy, like he's doing backflips and shit. It's awesome. But he wipes out like super hard, and like you see him like fall, and then you hear just like a squish sound, and you're like, what the hell is that? And then later they cut back to him, and his whole face, like, you just see like his skull and like the flesh ripped off it. I was like, this is so brutal. And also, like, it just seemed like a kid who just fucked up on a half pipe, not like anything sinister happened with this this vitamin organization.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. And I like the whole piece where he doesn't come back to the room or back to the resort. And for the whole thing, the parents are just like, oh, he's probably whatever. What did they say?
He's camping. He's camping. That's like a thing he does.
That's so funny.
You know him. He likes to run away and go camping.
Yeah, that whole thing's funny. And then there's the whole piece with the father in that group with the nasal drip. It starts with nasal drip. I think it's really gross, actually. And his nasal drip gets worse. Yeah.
It happens, like, at dinner, too, doesn't it?
It does.
Like, Yeah.
And it just ends up being, I can't even describe it. You really have to watch the movie. You just see it.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of these like kind of, like, gross-out effects are, like, words I feel like don't do it justice. It's really convincing and genuinely like kind of disturbing when you're sitting there watching it. The stuff with the pregnant woman is
that sequence
harrowing.
It's terrible. I mean,
yeah.
If you're pregnant, I don't think it's a great idea to watch this movie because she's having
no.
So what happens with these vitamins is you always start out having hallucinations, right? So that's the whole thing, is having hallucinations, and then you get, you know, all the other things kick in. So she has hallucinations around the baby, and she gets to the point where she's lying on the bed and looks like she's going to stab the baby, like her stomach. And her husband comes home and he tries to stop her. And we get this whole sequence of the I guess May said May's a midwife, so I guess she knows. She's like, was that the fetus? Like she, it looks like it was the fetus goes after his face, goes under his face. It's so gross.
Oh, maybe that was it. Because I know before that, her placenta drops out and then like starts taking on a life of its own. And she's calling the doctor, who is the creator of this drug, but also her OBGYN, I guess. And she's like, is it normal for me to like lose my placenta like a month before I deliver the baby? He's like, nope. That's not even a possible thing that could happen. And she hangs up the phone and then goes into the room. And then all of her, I guess, her body starts morphing. And, like, I guess that's supposed to be the hallucination. But also, the stuff really does do horrible things to people's bodies. So it's kind of hard to tell what is real and, like, what is just a mental side effect of these vitamins. Which also, by the way, if anyone just sends you supplements in the mail unsolicited, don't take the supplements. Like, why are you doing that? I feel like I would never in my life put any sort of powder in water and drink it for no reason, which a lot of these people seem to do.
That poor guy, the DJ, like, he just sees it in his letterbox and he goes, oh, okay, I'll start taking this. Yeah. For no reason. Yeah,
he's like, fantastic. I've been waiting for something that will make my water look green and unappealing. Can't wait to down that.
He has some weird shit that happens to him, too.
His is the least sensical, I think, of all of them, because no decision he makes any sense.
No.
In the whole thing.
I'm trying to remember why he even went to the airport. Remember he goes to the airport.
I don't remember why he goes to the airport. I think it was like some sort of business thing. And he's telling the cops when one of the chemists, I guess, who made it, he gets injected with it by some higher up at the company who he had sex with.
Sean, he's, I think, driving. The name is.
Yes. And then he drives around and it starts taking over and it's bad. He crashes into a car right in front of the DJ's house. And he's talking to the cops and he's like, I have to be at the airport right now. Like, can I leave? And the cops like are like super cool with like everyone just being like, yeah, go. Which I guess is fair. It's a car accident. Like, what can you do? And the guy seemed like not well. In fact, I'm surprised they investigate it to the extent they do, considering what it looks like in the moment. But he goes to the airport and then like just leaves because he gets a phone call and it's not clear also why he doesn't have to go where he's going.
Yeah, I don't know if he was going. I kind of figured at first maybe he was supposed to be picking someone up from the airport and then they called and said they couldn't make it or something, or like you said, he was going somewhere and then he wasn't going somewhere. But
yeah,
he has that weird hallucination with that crazy looking woman who then just turns into this beautiful woman.
Yeah. So he goes and I guess stops at like a coffee place or whatever, and he's just having coffee alone at a table. And then all of a sudden there's just this woman who is pretty, I don't know, she's got some physical deformities. And again, unclear as to what it is. And like when we're cutting back and forth between that and like the kind of like hillbilly family there, I'm like, oh, maybe it's the same thing going on here. Not the case. She's just a complete hallucination. And she's like kind of a dick to him, but also like, I need a place to stay. And he's like, I got you covered, which is not how you respond to that situation. You throw $3 on the table to pay for your coffee and you walk out.
Yeah. I think he just invited her to stay in his brain, maybe. So
Yeah.
Then he has that hallucination at home where he's having, I think it's sex with some woman that starts out looking like the woman he met at the airport. And there's this sequence where she pulls his rib out.
Yeah, but like she appears like two times. The second time she pulls the ribs out. The first time she's just rubbing his ribs. Like she's sitting on his legs and just like massaging his ribs. And he's like, this is awesome. Like he's so stoked about it. The second time it happens, she starts pulling at the ribs and stuff, but only after showing him her collection of ribs.
Yeah, she's got them like they look like in some sort of bag that opens out and it looks like you would normally have scissors and all sorts of stuff in there, like implements or instruments of some sort, but she's got it full of ribs. It's strange.
So bizarre. Yeah,
the whole movie.
And it's the most like specific of the hallucinations that the characters have. Like I feel like, you know, pregnant woman, like her hallucination is just that like, oh, like I don't know, my body's like getting more, like he's got like lore in his like his hallucination. She's like this woman who roams around collecting ribs and now she needs your rib.
It is weird, like, yeah, it's like another whole subplot altogether just in that one little bit.
For a while, I thought he was the main character. I was waiting for him to do something. I don't know why I thought he was, but...
Yeah, initially you think he is, right?
Yeah.
And he's got a bit of a... I love his death scene, like, where the doctor walks in on him and he's leaning up against the wall. He turns around and his face is all, you know... I think it's one of the shots that they use in a lot of the promos as well. But it's a great effect.
His face
looks fantastic. And what's really great about this is the effects are fantastic. And there's a whole scene where the guy crashes the car at the beginning of the movie. And we have that shot where he's lying on the bonnet and the little tendrils are coming out and going. It just looks fantastic.
Yeah. And it's really interesting. I spent, you know, a lot of time trying to figure out like, okay, because there's two things that like I still now, after watching it multiple times, like, I don't understand. And it's primarily, like, one, what were they trying to really accomplish with these drugs? Because I assume it wasn't just terrorizing the middle class, you know? Like, I don't think that was their main goal. They speak to, like, some sort of, like, well, you have no idea what your body is capable of given the right fuel and all that stuff. But I'm like, it's still so vague where I'm like, yeah, but what are you trying to do? Like what is... the intended result, and also like, what is the evidence that you have that it will work, like, and that you're this far along in the process? Like, show us like what the successful test subject looks like, because it, you know, it leaves a complete mystery. And also, like, I think that would maybe strengthen the character of this villainous organization a little bit, you know. It's philanthropic in their eyes, almost. They're giving back to humanity.
I think the only person that kind of survives is Pud. Right. So he's had it tested on himself. He kind of made it through. And it turns out that when he left the program, he took the one little ingredient that stops it from killing people. The doctor's confronting him on the farm and he yells in his weird way. And one of his sons throws the rock that uncovers a cup. Then under the cup is the little vial. And he tells the doctor that, you know, when he left the program, he took this little vial, and this vial is the ingredients that's required to control it so it doesn't go out of control. And that's what they'd be missing. So I don't know why he took it. I guess it's because he might have got
fired. Or how they wouldn't notice that, because they seem completely unaware of that the whole time, that this very important thing is missing. Also, apparently the drugs, I guess, gave him really good hearing. Which, by the way, doesn't seem like a strong justification for taking these weird drugs.
No, not at all. So. But he's still got a bit of a puffy face. You can kind of see where his face is kind of, you know, a bit puffy and weird.
And he's got a lot of tics.
Yeah, he's got a lot of tics. Yeah.
Doing a lot of weird shit.
Yeah.
I mean, his family's all fucked up, but I just attribute that to inbreeding.
Sounds like it. Good old slab.
Good old slab. Miss America or Miss Australia.
Miss Australia, yeah. Like I was saying, the car accident, and then we've got a bit later on, the autopsy of the guy that was in the accident at the start of the movie. And that autopsy scene is fantastic because they actually built that whole body. So he actually built the body of the, like, what's his name?
He's only alive in the movie for like 5 minutes.
So in the...
can't think of his name either.
Yeah. So Bob McCarran built this whole body, cast the actor in this body, and built the whole thing out of rubber or out of whatever they built it out of, which is quite amazing. And the only thing I could think of when they were talking about it when I was watching the documentary is they've got this full-size body. I was like, I wonder where that ended up. That was the only question I had. Who's got that now, or did it just get thrown somewhere and eventually?
It'd be a shame. It's just probably in like a landfill probably like the actual answer. But like, I don't know. You hear about things like expensive props from like movies and stuff just like being worked into other movies further down the line in ways you couldn't possibly expect. So hopefully it's something like
that. It could have got reused. Yeah.
It's a great effect.
It is.
It looks good.
Really good. Yeah. Managed to sculpt a donger on him, give him a good sized donger.
I'm sure he was really happy. I think that was in his his contract. If you want to have my naked dead body in there, fine. But he's got to be fucking
packed. Yeah, you got to have my donger in there. Yeah. And the coroner in that scene is really good. I'll let that guy. He's quite.
Yeah, he's doling out a lot of the exposition there. He's selling it.
Yeah, he's talking about all the drugs they're obviously taking, and he's saying, "Oh, it's not this, it's not that," and he's a little bit strange as well. He's kind of got that strange look to him as well.
Well, he was one healthy dude, unnaturally healthy. Now I'm talking new drugs here, right? Not your 70s designer shit or your 80s ghetto powders. I'm talking fucking 90s, man. Cognition enhancers. Designed to take your mind into new intra-phenomenological dimensions.
The thing I have to talk about in this movie is the bodybuilder guys at the resort.
Yeah. Speaking of penises.
Oh, my God. So they're these guys are obviously like the hired help around the resort and or around, you know, around the factory as well. And they're these really built bodybuilders, but they all have, I think it's kind of taking the piss on, you know, supplements that a lot of these bodybuilders take with their hormones and whatever, because they all have really high pitched voices.
Right. There's that thing about like, you know, like steroids and like performance enhancing drugs that like does stuff to your, you know, your testosterone output and things like that. And fucks with your, you know, perceived notion of masculinity in a lot of ways. I'm trying to dance around it. Apparently it makes your dick small in a lot of different ways for different reasons, something to do with your testicles. But, yeah, they all have these high pitched voices and I was like, I checked the sound on my TV when one of them started talking and I was like, there's no way that's coming out of him. That guy's a fucking house. Like he's huge.
And then we have this great set. We have two scenes with them. We have one where one of the guys just tries to have sex with I don't even know what she does. The woman that's there. She's obviously works there or something.
She's like some sort of like brand ambassador.
Yeah, something like that. And he doesn't have sex with her and so she leaves, so he puts on a porno. He's got another porno movie on. And he's going to look after himself.
Look after himself, that's great.
And his penis just grows and grows because he's been taking this. And it explodes.
Still explodes.
That's
what a way to go.
Oh, no, what a way to go. And that just shows you how crazy this fucking movie is. It's so weird.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, they do a lot with, like, what they can show. Like, you know, you see the dead guy's, like, full dick, but, like, this is just, like, bulge in pants and then just a splat onto the screen of the porn. Which is great. Like, it works really well. Like, I didn't need to actually see a penis explode on camera. Like, this is like a perfect. There's like this, I don't know, a gory picture show that I do with Dr. Brandon Hardy, who you've had on this show several times.
Lots of times.
And he's wonderful. We talked about a movie on that show called Necromantic, and at the end of that movie, like, there's just like a huge like graphic cum shot that turns into like blood spurting and everything, but it happens for like 30 to 40 seconds and it's very excessive, and it's just like, I don't know, I feel like I would have gotten the point if I just saw like a tent in his pants and then like things hitting the wall. Do I need to watch it happen?
Exactly.
Does it add a lot to it? Not really, no.
It's actually quite works quite well because you know exactly what's happened. You see the bulge and then you see the
The
splatter. Yeah.
And we've seen what's happened to other people here. Like, their shit's not safe.
As soon as it starts bulging, you know exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, what one thing, the pregnant woman. So her stomach like blows out quite literally. There's like wind coming out of it. That was very confusing to me. Where is the wind coming from?
I have no idea. And it's almost like they stuck a fan in there and it's just blowing.
Yeah.
And there was bits of skin. Well, and then
the husband walks in and it's like blowing his hair back and everything.
All I could think of when I was saw the stomach explode out and there was like little flaps of skin or something flapping around, all I could think of is like all those movies where they put the whatever it is on the fans, so you can see in the movie that the fans are actually
tassels?
Working.
Yeah. that no one's ever had on a fan in real life ever, because that makes no sense.
Yeah, it's just a device for movies, right? So you can see that it's switched on. The other thing I'm glad I didn't see is what happened to either Gino or whatever his name was in the barn with Slab. You kind of see it, but you don't see it close up, thankfully.
Yeah, it's a weird way that they cut around it, because they're cutting back and forth between the two Italian sperm donors, and one of them is in the shed with Slab, and Slab like says, "Do you want some sort of, I don't know, I think she's describing a sex act, and I think he thinks that as well, and he's like, yeah, great, go for it." And then when they cut back, you know, there's the weird tour, how are you guys related, I don't know, here's the scream. And they cut back to Slab and one of the Italians. She's standing over him, and she's got like a big wooden stake of some kind,
yeah.
And is just fucking driving it into his crotch very aggressively, and then hunches over him and starts biting at his neck.
Yeah.
And what are you doing? What are you getting out of that? And why?
There's no reason. It's quite strange, but...
Is that what she thinks sex is? Because
maybe she
leaves.
Does, right?
Right, because that's when she gets the whole keep it in the family thing.
Yeah.
And then they're like, well, now we got to kill this guy. And it's like, is this what happens whenever someone has sex with you guys? Is this how it goes for you?
Yeah, I love how they just decide, yeah, now we got to kill this guy. And he does a really dumb
thing. He's overhearing it like, oh, no.
And rather than trying to run away for the farm, he kind of runs to the car that's just going around in circles, which we mentioned before. But you don't see what...
Bud's just laughing at him.
Yeah. You don't see what happens to him, though, so...
Yeah, it's presumed. How did you feel about the twist of Pud being, like, in cahoots with the doctor?
Kind of makes sense, I guess, in a way, that they were working together and this is how he ended up with the... You know, the whatever's on his face and,
right.
And things like that. So at least, I guess it works that way, and I guess it's also just a function for the film because he holds the little vial of whatever it is, the ingredient that would have made it safe, and took that with him when he say why he left.
He makes some sort of comment. He was like, "I'm the only one who's like got the guts to like try the stuff on himself." Like, and so maybe I just took it as like there was some bitterness there where he was like, you know, I'm putting everything into this and you guys are like testing on suburbanites.
Yeah, I think Dr. Carrera or whatever his name was basically saying all along, no, we should be, you know, doing it on animals and mice and whatnot. And he's like, oh, we have to do it on humans. And then he ended up doing it on himself.
Were they brothers? Did I make that up?
I don't think so.
For some reason, no. Okay.
I don't think so.
I completely made that up then. I don't know why in my head they were brothers.
Yeah, I don't think so. They seem to... Looks like they go back a long way.
Yeah, yeah. There's a familiarity between them that's pretty tangible.
And then the other scene I've got to talk about is the one right at the end of the movie in the police station where...
After I thought the movie was over, by the way.
Yeah, it's on.
Like they catch the doctor and it's like, oh, okay, we roll credits now, right? And there's this... whole other thing.
There's
yeah.
this whole
Sorry,
other
continue.
Thing where they're in the police station, and they've got the husband of the woman that was pregnant, and he's in the police station because they arrested him and took him away, and he's obviously starting to melt down, and he's in the office of Sam Phillips, the main detective, and there's that scene where he says, "Oh, he's in my office," sort of thing, like. My office is going to get all messed up. And then you've got the bit with, I think it's Cameron Daddo is the guy that plays the other policeman. How does that classic line when he's looking in there, they're sort of all crouched looking into there, and he just says, "Fuck a duck." And it's like,
and, I love that expression,
yeah,
by the way.
I use that expression fuck sometimes as well, yeah. Fuck a duck, root a bandicoot.
Is that an Australian thing?
Fuck like a duck. Fuck a duck probably is, yeah. 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 Fuck a duck, root a bandicoot, that sort of stuff.
Bandicoot.
But then you guys have a different word for root. That's what I always think is really funny when Americans say, "Oh, we're rooting for this footy team" or something. I feel like, rooting in Australia is a little bit different.
wait, what is rooting in Australia?
So in Australia, rooting is vernacular for fucking someone.
Oh, yeah, to, like, root for someone so to, like, cheer them on here. Yeah. Yeah.
So here it's always been really weak. It's like fanny pack. I don't understand fanny pack. Because you guys have fanny packs, which is really weird. Because in Australia, your fanny is a vagina.
Right. Okay. So I'm aware of that. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, still doesn't make a lot of sense here. Fanny is butt here.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't really get it. But, like, the packs aren't on your ass. Like, you keep them on, like, your, I don't know, like, your side or your hip. My wife has one, and I hate it.
Yeah, they're not.
I don't know why.
They're not cool. I'm sorry. Apologize to your wife for me.
No, I'm gonna tell her that someone's backing me up on this.
So you can tell her about this conversation. And say no, I don't like it either. So
I'm gonna
absolutely. Yeah.
Thank you, Pete.
So yeah, so we're in this scene, and the guy's slowly melting down, and there's this other cop who's in there who looks like he's absolutely shaking in fear and can't move. Because he could quite easily either A, duck down under the desk that's right in front of him, or B, just bolt from the room. And he does neither. Yeah, that whole scene, and eventually the guy just melts down and there's bits of him exploding off the wall, and it's a great scene.
It's so chaotic and so weird, and also, like, it's I found it really funny every time I watched it, just, like, all the cops, like, pointing guns at this man who is clearly dying already, like, without their assistance.
Yeah, they don't really have to do anything, do they?
No. They're not even, like, really in danger other than, like, gross, you know? Like, if that got on me, that would be disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
But they're like, don't fucking move!
Yeah. But it's almost like, to me, that scene almost plays out like an epilogue more than a luck scene, yeah.
It really feels like they could have rolled credits at, you know, catching this doctor and him giving the spiel and then blowing his brains out.
Yeah. But they don't. Yeah, it just shows how chaotic, because the movie is very chaotic. It's kind of like, it is all over the place. The ideas are all over the place.
Yeah.
It's kind of, like I said at the beginning, it's obviously born of something that wanted to be like a four story thing and wasn't, they weren't able to do that, so they just decided, oh, let's just throw it all in here and just see what comes out the other end.
Yeah. I think, you know, you could, some editing, I think, could make this make a lot more sense. I feel the way that a lot of, I think this comes into, like, what, like an hour 22?
Yeah, it's not a long movie. Right? Yeah.
Right, so there's probably, like, a strong desire of just, you know, hit feature length, right? So that goes on into it a lot. I do feel like there's points that could be lifted very easily. A lot of the cop investigation, like, isn't super relevant. A lot of exposition, maybe one or two subplots you can cut down and still get the point. They're not all that strong. I think, honestly, the one with the DJ turns out to be the weakest of the bunch. You can rip that one out, maybe make it like a lean 45, you know, and have like a really solid fun thing, and yeah, there probably still be some plot holes, but you know.
But you could also do so much. You could still have the same movie, but kind of change it, like just use that whole premise of this pharmaceutical company doing stuff they shouldn't be doing and testing products on people that shouldn't, you know, that they're unsuspecting. And you could actually make it a decent movie with a fair amount of gore, like make it a little bit more serious. Because to me, this movie is definitely comedy horror, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh, it's super goofy. It's not actually scary. I think maybe the hillbilly stuff is a little creepy at points. Yeah. I just find that scene kind of disturbing. So maybe that's on me. But it's for the most part, yeah. It's like a fun, like, splat stick kind of thing. I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head. Like a double feature of this and Dead Alive.
Perfect. Yeah, that's a great idea. You know what, though, for all its failings that we've talked about and all this other stuff, I actually still love this movie, and I'll watch it again because it's just it's just balls to the wall fucking crazy, and just it's just one of those great movies that I love. So maybe I'm a bit simple, where you can just sort of sit down, turn your brain off for, you know, an hour 20, and just be thoroughly entertained by something that's just crazy, that's stupid, and you know, you don't have to take anything out of it, and there's no sitting down when it's finished and go, I'll think a little bit more about what might have been. It's just there. It just does its thing, you know.
It's like a good like crowd pleaser kind of thing. Like I feel like, you know, if I were to go to, me and the guys from RMR when that was a thing, we would go to like horror movie marathons, and like this would be like a perfect thing to insert there. Like if there's like four movies, that's, if this is the second movie, like it's getting rowdy in that theater. Like it's gonna be a good time. It's a great thing to like drink with your buddies, and put on, get like disturbingly high and put on. Like it's a good communal movie. I think
it is a great party movie. It would work well at a place, even though we don't have them here. It would work well at a place like Alamo or something like that, I think.
Yeah, fantastic.
But so, any final thoughts on this before we wrap up?
Yeah, man, I had a really good time with it. I think I hindered myself in trying too hard to understand the story. And it's if I can, you know, if anyone listening hasn't seen it yet, and you're planning on doing so, my only advice is just like, don't bother trying to figure out what's going on. Enjoy the characters, enjoy the effects, enjoy like the wacky weird things happening, and just let it play out and wash over you. It's a really good time, and I'm really glad I got a chance to talk to you about it, Pete.
Yeah, it's fun movie, and yeah, it's perfect movie for us. I'm surprised you still haven't done it on Gory Picture Show, but there's plenty more like that, I'm sure.
Oh yeah, I'm sure at some point we might loop back around to this one.
Cool. So thanks very much for that. Let me know a little bit about what's going on with your podcast, your life at the moment. What's happening?
Yeah, man. So I have a couple podcasts. Well, I had. So Random Movie Roulette just ended. We just posted our finale a few weeks ago. We covered Houssou, The Exorcist, and Psycho. And we read some viewer mail, and it was a fun goodbye, and that's great. We have another show that we're working on developing right now. We have a concept for that we're really excited that will be happening sometime in probably early next year. Probably January is when we're going to launch it. So keep an eye on my Twitter for that if you want to know more, at Louis J. Otero. And then I also have a show I do with Dr. Brandon Hardy, the Gory Picture Show. We talk about the taboo, twisted, weird, and gritty grindhouse drive-in backroom and video store drivel your parents didn't know to warn you about. And I love it. We just did an episode with Mike from RMR and Jack from RMR. We did two episodes. Jack brought us Halloween H2O, and Mike brought us the WNUF Halloween special. So you can find all of that great stuff on our Twitter at @gory_show or on whatever podcast service you listen to things on.
Thank you so much. So it was great catching up with you again. Really enjoyed it. It was a really fun episode. It's a fun movie. It's just a great movie to talk about, this movie.
It is. It is. It's a blast. Thank you so much for having me, man.
Not a problem. Thank you very much for coming in. And when we come back, we'll be talking about what's up next.
And now, preview time. When it comes to entertainment, you can't beat a good film. So let's take a look at what's coming your way.
Ladies and gentlemen, sorcery. This is Stunt Rock. It's superhuman. Super music. Super magic. And super amazing. You'll be compelled over the edge of sight and sound, and under the spell of mind-boggling action and music, push to the danger zone. It's a death wish at 120 decibels.
Fly in the highest heights. You fly the farthest lights. Living on normal time. Your life is on.
Stunt Rock, the ultimate rush.
Next up on A Dingo Ate My Movie, I'm back with Jay to talk about Brian Trenchard-Smith's love letter to stuntmen and rock music with Stunt Rock from 1986. Thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode. Thank you to all my guests who give their time to make this podcast possible, and a special thanks to you for listening. Don't forget, you can follow A Dingo Ate My Movie on social media. We're at Dingo Movie on Twitter, Dingo Movie Pod on Facebook and Instagram, and on the web at dingomoviepod.com. And finally, we love feedback, so please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts, or drop me a line at pete@dingomoviepod.com. I take feedback very seriously, and it helps me to improve the show for you and all the other listeners. Once again, thanks for listening. Stay safe, and I'll see you on the next episode of A Dingo Ate My Movie.
How many times do I have to tell you? Keep it in the family!